on Life.
Hello, welcome to Lucas on Life here on Premier Christian Radio. I'm Jeff Lucas. For regular listeners, a couple of months ago, I talked about the power of kindness. Guess what? I'd like to talk about it again, because just a couple of weeks ago, People magazine announced a new campaign that's being launched by the Luisa Diaz Foundation. It's called Kindness is Cool. Dina Lohan, the mother of Lindsay Lohan, has got involved with the campaign, and she said, "One act of kindness can change someone's mindset immediately, and we never know what someone is going through." She continued, "The whole intention is to promote that kindness is cool, and we want to position kindness as a strength, because sometimes when you talk about it, people think that if you're kind, you're weak. So we're giving a makeover to kindness." A makeover to kindness. That statement really got me thinking. And she's absolutely right, because kindness, it can seem just a bit syrupy, over-sentimental. But as followers of Jesus, we should know that the Bible repeatedly emphasized kindness. And let's face it, in our loud, screaming, aggressive world, we probably need to be reminded constantly about the power of just being kind. Love is kind, says 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4. And then the Apostle Paul, writing to the church in Ephesus, he said, "Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God forgave you." And then in Colossians chapter 3, verse 12, "Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience." And there's no doubt about it. The Bible calls us to be kindness. Surely a principal reason for that is that God himself is so incredibly kind, and he wants to shape us to be like him. One of the most beautiful words in the Old Testament is the Hebrew word hesed, often translated in the English versions as loving kindness. God is kind. His justice is rooted in his faithfulness. His kindness, his hesed, is so solid and steadfast. J.R. Miller says there have been meetings of only a moment which have left impressions for life and for eternity. No one can understand that mysterious thing we call influence, yet every one of us continually exerts influence, either to heal, to bless, to leave marks of beauty, or to wound, to hurt, to poison, to stain other lives. So let's think again about the power of kindness. We're focusing again on the power of kindness. Airports, well, they're just not my favorite places, which is unfortunate because I spend quite a lot of time in them. I'm trying to reduce that because it's really not good for the environment or for me. I don't mind flying so much, even though some in-flight food is surely created by demonized chefs. But unlike that excited newbie traveler, the thrilled 10-year-old, or even that pencil-toting soul who goes plane-spotting, I'm no longer very joyous when I step inside an airport terminal. Airports, as far as I'm concerned, well, they're usually emotional black holes. Admittedly, there are some happy folk to be seen, although some of them have smiles fueled by quaffing lager with their airport breakfast, a habit that is surely prohibited in Leviticus. But most people in airports are there simply because they actually want to be somewhere else. But there came a day when the sun came out in Denver Airport Terminal A, and all because of a lady that Kay and I spotted. We first saw her on the swaying transit train that propelled us towards our gate area. Standing next to a nervous-looking family, she greeted them warmly, all smiles, and wished them a great day and a happy flight. Stood behind us when we boarded an escalator, she smiled and joked with a rather sullen-looking passenger there too. And then, to our surprise and delight, she lined up for the same flight as us, which is remarkable because Denver Airport has over 1,600 flights daily. As she boarded, she profusely thanked the gate agent. We took off. I popped a peanut into my mouth, helpful salty provision for the dehydrating conditions of flying, And then I pondered her kindness. It was then that I felt a nudge, perhaps from God. If I could find her once we'd landed, I should encourage her about her refreshing, wonderful attitude. My mind immediately recoiled at the notion. The lady might not welcome an approach from a random chap. My well-meaning intentions could end up as an episode of Stranger Danger. After we'd landed and disembarked the plane, she was nowhere to be found. Frankly, I felt relieved, off the hook, from what I'd thought might be a mission from God. Down in the packed baggage claim area, I dutifully scanned the crowd, but in vain. And then I noticed that she was standing right next to me, talking on the phone. Suddenly, her carry-on bag fell over at my feet. This could be my moment, but she was still talking as I helped her. She thanked me mid-call, grabbed her bags and headed away and then stopped to take a text. Our luggage arrived and we headed to walk past her, and that's when her bag fell over once more, again, right at my feet. I plunged in nervously. "Excuse me," I said. "This might sound a little strange, but I'm a pastor, and my wife and I both noticed your repeated kindness back in Denver. It's so refreshing to see someone act like you do. I prayed that I'd have the chance to meet you and thank and encourage you. So, thank you." Her mouth fell open. She smiled broadly and then started to cry. Happy tears. After the briefest of chats, she hurried off to repair her ruined mascara, and I was left wondering. God had apparently performed some nifty choreography to enable that moment. Now, let me say immediately, I'm wary of those Christians who see God steering every little detail of life. I no longer pray for parking spaces, unless I desperately need one, feeling that the Lord of the universe has other things to deal with. But my faith in coincidences is limited. We often say that the devil's in the detail, but perhaps, just perhaps, God was in that detail too. The detail of that encounter. Did he set that up? Possibly. Probably even. But this much is absolutely certain. Kindness, so wonderfully demonstrated by that smiling, gracious lady, can light up gloomier spaces. Kindness, as I mentioned earlier, is an often overlooked characteristic of God himself, who graced his old covenant people with that beautiful loving kindness. Paul, writing a letter to his friends in Ephesus, celebrated the God who showers kindness upon us in Christ Jesus. Again, when we're kind, we're just a little more like God. Kindness, well, it often costs nothing except time, thought, intentionality, but surely it turns heads and hearts here on earth. And who knows, perhaps heaven watches and celebrates acts of kindness as well. All this talk of kindness, especially in airports, makes me feel just a little uncomfortable because a few years ago I had a rather different experience in an airport when I almost got into a fight. And I'm not talking about a war of words. I met a thoroughly unpleasant chap and it almost came to blows. Now I know, it's a bit odd for a Christian minister to confess that he came close to an actual punch-up, but it did happen, and as soon as it did, I knew I had to share the experience. This time Kay and I were in Chicago Airport, eagerly hunting for a snack. The atmosphere dank with the mild despair that descends when multiple flights are delayed due to weather. We entered a teeming restaurant and found the last two chairs at a shared table. Across from us was a very expensive-looking bag, all fur and leather, occupying a seat. We assumed that it belonged to the man who sat next to it, but we were quite wrong. An older lady came by and inquired about the bag. "Is this yours?" she asked, ever so sweetly. Nobody around the table claimed ownership, but then immediately the soul who wins my Rude Man of My Lifetime award made himself known to us all. He was young, handsome, and dressed in designer clothing with flashy jewellery. Sitting up at a bar just across from the table, he barked, "That's my bag. I don't want it left on the floor, so leave it alone. When I finish my meal, I'll move it." mouths open wide around the table, aghast at the suggestion that this elderly lady be made to stand while this posh but inanimate object, the bag, occupied the only available chair. This was absurd. And so I decided to take action and, a little louder than necessary, invited the lady to take my chair. She sat down, then smiled and whispered, "Perhaps you could teach him a lesson." Emboldened by her encouragement, I walked over and gently tapped Mr. Rude on the shoulder. "Excuse me, sir, but have I understood? You wanted that lovely lady to stand and wait while you eat because your luggage is that important?" He glared back at me, his deep blue eyes cold. Then he snapped back, his thin lips tight. "Now look here, it seems that you're the gentleman and you gave her your seat, so it's good, yes?" And that's when I knew that we were at a point of no return. His icy stare made his message clear. "Just say one more word and I'm going to give you a slap." That's the message I received, and so I decided to not say one more word, for a number of reasons, which include me being allergic to pain, the fact that it's awkward when ministers get into an airport struggle and then are arrested, and then I felt like my job had been done anyway. I'd made my point. Back at the table, we chatted happily with the older lady. Eventually, young, bag-obsessed Blue Eyes stopped by to pick up his priceless luggage, and with a rude parting shot, he headed out to catch his flight. I was incensed and spent the rest of the day internally fuming about his staggering gift of arrogance. Our flight was delayed further and I wandered around the airport hoping to see him to pursue our chat a little further, but perhaps providentially I didn't find him. But then I started thinking, which can be dangerous. Obviously his attitude was somewhat extreme, but I wondered how often I'm just like him. In that moment, he failed to see a person, that lady, who needed a chair. And we can do the same thing, especially if we deal with people a lot. Kindness can become a casualty. The busy doctor in the casualty ward is told that there's a broken arm in cubicle 6, rather than recently widowed Mr. Jones, who's desperate for the briefest warm chat. And the shop assistant yawns, indifferent to the customer, who has just become another commodity. And the pastor looks out over the congregation, seeing a crowd, recording Sunday morning attendance numbers and offering figures, but not noticing real flesh and blood people with hopes, dreams, needs and heartaches. And then the hunched figure wrapped in a thin sleeping bag in that doorway becomes a homeless statistic rather than a person with a name and a story, perhaps a person who desperately needs some acts of kindness, someone to notice them, to help them. The great Jewish theologian Martin Buber spoke of our dangerous temptation to treat people as objects rather than subjects. All around us this coming week, there'll be people unique, needy, hopeful, hopeless, fascinating people. Let's notice them and let's be kind. Walt Disney, famous for That Mouse and those Magic Kingdoms, said that there are three types of people in the world, and his words can help us as we've been thinking about kindness. According to Disney, there are the well poisoners, gifted in draping others with wet blankets of discouragement and obscenely eager to tell others what they can't do, even if they can. These emotional vandals love to trample dreams and snuff out sparks of creativity. Avoid the well poisoners if you can, especially if you own a well. And then, according to Disney, there are those who mow their lawns. They are nice people, highly moral and meticulous, but they're exclusively concerned with their own lives, which includes, presumably, manicuring their own lawns. They love their pristine gardens, fuss endlessly over them, but never move a muscle to help the guy next door so that he can chop his way through those chin-high weeds. If you're going to have an emergency, pray it doesn't happen on their doorstep because they won't be in. Finally, in Disney's thinking, there are the life enhancers. These beautiful souls are quick, to reach out and live with their eyes and hearts open and fueled by a passion to strengthen and enrich others. The life enhancers encourage, lift up, inspire. In short, they are kind. See you next week. Lucas on Life.